Buckminster Fuller was an eccentric guy. He spoke at length. Just endless back and forth. He would say his ideas as a kind of springboard, and then he would actuate them through illustrations and actually building them. So he kind of had both sides of things covered. He did the lecture circuit relentlessly. So he would be going to schools and colleges and Unitarian churches, and he would speak up to 18 hours at a time and just go on these wild monologues. And, you know, it's kind of interesting because, I think right now we're sort of the superfluous production of language is actually sort of causing a kind of barrier. And it reinforces the fact that we don't make anything anymore. And that a lot of these media forms are not actually forms. They're midpoints. Even Neoplatonists like Limblichus mention this in his work on mathematics and geometry. We're kind of in this interesting spot. This past Easter, I was thinking a little bit about some of Buckminster Fuller's more, I guess you could say, poetic work, which is kind of weird because this essay was not really, it was abbreviated and shortened and put in the format of a poem because people said his stuff was just too off the wall. It couldn't really be read that easily. So one thing I wanted to do was actually read No More Secondhand God by R. Buckminster Fuller and just read it through its entirety because it's full of faith. I think it's very sort of hopeful in a way. And I was just browsing through the 99 cent store and its empty aisles, and it was inflation. Back in 1982, $1 was $3.82 today. Because of the modularization of commodity forms that are in fact devoid of any kind of useful ownership or utility, because we're basically renters of this technology. All of this stuff has a shelf life. This isn't, we're not creating ultra habitable things, which is another thing. And, going out of town and seeing some things, going to the rodeo and looking for these kind of alternatives, I would say is something I'm invested in. And I think it's a pretty, it's a pretty interesting time. So not to get too much of an introduction here, but I'm going to read No More Secondhand God. Late tonight, April 9th, 1940, I'm just sitting here for one of many reasons that people find themselves passionately isolated. The cause is rarely noble. In the midst of my overly self-empathetic thought, I say suddenly, as most of us do, imagine, realize the preposterousness of your chagrin in the face of what is involved in the newspaper headline on the chair over there. Oslo Key bases taken, Big Sea Air battles on World Telegram 7 Sports. It's no longer a phony war, but I don't think about that, nor do I think much about Oslo. I think of such of the aviators and sailormen as in command of their faculties on both sides of this moment. Though you have been out in a froth-spitting squall on Long Island Sound or in an ocean liner on a burgeoning sea, You have but a childlike hint of what a 19-year-old's reaction is to the pitch-black shrieking out there in the very cold northern elements of unloosening spring off Norway's coast tonight. 15,000 feet up, or 50 under, or worse, on the smashing face of it, and here I see God. I see God in the instruments and the mechanisms that work reliably, more reliably than the limited sensory departments of the human mechanism. And he who is befuddled by self or by habit, by what others say, by fear, by sheer chaos of unbelief in God, and in God's fundamental orderliness, ticking along on those dials will perish. And he who unerringly interprets those dials will come through. Sorry, just one second. He who unerringly interprets those dials will come through. Those who identify the will of the outside will be okay. This is kind of why, you know, in the midst of all of this I'm not reading right now. You know, it's like I see homeless people on the street, and each person increasingly in Los Angeles looks like a fallen star. They have this look like they clinged on to their idealism and their hopes and dreams just a little bit too long, and they didn't know when to let go, and it consumed them, and they got stuck in this situation. And this is why I caution people, you know, get the fuck out of LA if you're here. There's better stuff out there. It exists. You know, we can't afford to produce when production costs are this high. To get back. And thought-wise, exploring further the possibilities of inuring interpretation, I think of the strangest of paradoxes, vouchsafed so and by man. For most simply through paradox do I usually discover truth. A sufficient light within a seemingly opaque black object may suddenly convert that object into a brilliant, varicolored lantern. So within this darkness, this tapestry of different shades, some kind of light can penetrate. As a philosophic corollary, multifaceted truth is discovered within the lantern of paradox, whose contrasting colors are but in angularly separated lines of the spectrum of the unit phenomenon, light, only at different wavelengths and frequencies. A new and translucently truth is thus lensed in all the colloidals to human necessity, such as drama and music, religion, fun, anger, war, prejudice, praise, as individually assumed personal virtues and relative proximity to God. Ecce. All peoples divided against one another are in their digressions equally inverted and self-deceived in their respective tampered with standards. The degree of self-deception is proportional to the width of the angle of disagreement. And the greater the angle of stress, the greater the anger. The greater the anger, the greater the susceptibility to further propaganda, a cancerous hate growth. And all propaganda is fake, if merely by misemphasis. It is false because it approaches diametric unbalance, which, scientifically speaking, is chaotic. Chaos is erosive, explosive, shattering, and therefore the antithesis of the only potential survival means of Homo sapiens. Through the harmonic integration of knowledge, whose kinetic is universal. Observe some paradoxes. On the one hand, the German and Russians preaching rule of the masses, national socialism, atheism, paganism, are in fact sole demonstrators of the importance of individualism, for they employ individualism's most cogent premise that the ship must have but one captain. And as individuals, they believe precisely in the survival superiority of mechanized man. But the organized church, on comprehending the mechanical extension of man, says that such belief is pagan. And the totalitarians accept the designation as true, and therefore proceed with wanton conviction to behave in the appropriate manner of a social outcast. Thus licensed, they invent vast and oftentimes ludicrous prevarications as ballistic instruments. They lie with as eager enthusiasm as that applied to gunpowder and plane making. And on the other hand, the English and French, through preaching democracy, individualism, and Christianity, are the greatest progenitors of collectivism and paganism. For theirs is a corporate amorphous individualism, a legal entity individualism, of limited personal liabilities, a shadowy industrial monopoly, a secondhand dictatorhood, soulless. And its sovereign perfidies perpetuated usually through the negative tactics of omission or misemphasis may reasonably be charged off to impracticality, to unwieldiness, to vagaries of custom, to sportsmanship, to public convenience, or to mystical traditions. Incumbent upon the corporate messiahhood of sovereign nations. And the machine is to them and their church but an inanimate, gargary sort of money pump. Albeit the preaching individual of either side believes naively in his own personal free will, articulation, and benevolence. That hits hard. I say naively because the war itself is the direct cumulative result of non-freedom of the will of the individual to articulate itself in the attainment of its obvious potentialities of better living on earth. Children are not born slaves. Slavehood is swiftly superimposed. Now the inanimate slaves are here to take over, but the animate slave complex is still virulent, particularly in the subconscious of managers and in the traditions they manage. Wherefore, total abolition apparently involves first burning down the old house, set on fire as an unbelievable clown act, which much to the amazement of the clown proprietors, no one attempts to put out. In the great quasi-democracies, so far as the general scheming of things is concerned, the individual no longer exists. Mass production anticipates the individual's selective functioning. Chain hotels mass produce mass collected service suggestions tendered on printed cards by a mass publicized unseen cordial host who is sometimes 1,000 miles away, sometimes long dead, sometimes quite non-existent, is quote-unquote personally interested in you and your comfort at 200 of your cents on quote-unquote his dollar. Here also, as citizen, man is expressed only as a party machine in the body politic, and his government expresses a mean, low, average, statistic man. Any social action, if all, is weeks, months, and years laggard to the thinking frontier of the individual. His hour, minute, and split-second thinking and vital selection are most nearly interpreted, but nevertheless inadequately, by the corporate cranium, quote-unquote, journalism, industrialization's limited liability vocalizer. And as capitalist or as inventor or as worker in the democracies, he is no longer individual, for he is no longer effective as such. And he may only be flavoringly effective as one of the many merged riskers, researchers, believers, or laborers. No corporate expression expresses what he exactly means. And therein precisely lies the fate of democracy. Many people believe democracy obsolete. They are wrong. Obsolete is one thing. Democracy can never be obstinate, obtreperous, observant, obscure, but I will explain, that is, I will, if it's democracy you really wish to save and not some trick you have been getting away with behind its kindly broad young back. If you don't really believe in the world, that is, but only in one to come or one gone by, your best chance of finding such another is by walking out a very high window. If you do believe in the world that is and wish to continue its development and are willing truly to pay your way, take a chance on democracy. You will find its highway plunk beneath your feet. Today's signposts along it are modern, they say, for instance. If you wish to prove democracy a preferential method of living, don't resort to dictatorship to prove it. Thus have all the rest of the major nations allowed themselves to be bums rushed into doing by panicked international finances. Out of the method chosen in the time of emergency emerges a new survival way of peacetime government. Democracy has potential within it the satisfaction of every individual's need. But democracy must be structurally modernized, must be mechanically implemented to give it a one individual to another speed and spontaneity of reaction, consumer it to the speed and scope of broadcast news, now worldwide in seconds. This is sort of the pitfall of the internet. Side note, the spontaneity of reaction is actually what killed the instrumental method of Fuller's essays and seminars, which essentially changed the world. You know, he was this really short, nearsighted guy. He, you know, dressed kind of like a cobbled old, you know, librarian. And part of his thing was, you know, I'm this unspectacular man who's just a vessel for God. I'm a vessel for a message that goes beyond myself. And that's what got him out of suicidal depression, too. And I think it's also sort of important to realize that he said something very beautiful. He said that he wanted to prove to the world that some middling person, some normal, just average, everyday guy could do something that could change the world, and that he wasn't special in any way, shape, or form. And, you know, I think that's a really beautiful thing, because he saw himself as a part of some larger universal tapestry of humanity. So we're going to get back to this. You know, it's very emotional for me, you know, thinking about this stuff, honestly. Through mechanical developments of the industrial age, the cumulative production of human events within the span of a 4-year administration is now the quantitative equivalent of the events of a 400-year pre-industrial dynasty. But it is the producer salesman who has been super instrumented and merged into a tinker colossus, a pan-continental blacksmith, baker, and lightmaker. Democracy must, as consumer and worker, as soldier and mother, as scientist or simple enjoyer, be made adequate cathode to the mighty merged anode. Devise a mechanical means for nationwide voting daily and secretly by each adult citizen of Uncle Sam's family. Then I assure you that will democracy, quote-unquote, be saved, indeed exist for the first time in history. So the direct model of democracy is one that can only be saved if you can cast a ballot every single day of your fucking life. And the only way that we can do that is through taking these sort of matters into our own hands. And I've been researching utopian communities for a while now. Specifically right now, Jean Lafitte and this French utopian pirate Corsair community that he set up on Galveston Bay. And, you know, thinking about the ways these things can go wrong, it's because they're too limited in scope. And this is what Buckminster Fuller says. He says utopian communities are too private. They're not done through a shared universal. So it's like, I've set up this thing for, but it's like, but who's going to farm? You know, I was watching this interview with like Chief Keef and Young Chop from like the TDE days in 2012, and Young Chop had a really good point. He was like, how you win is you build a team. You know, you have to build a team and you have to find other people around you who can do what you can't do. And this is how you win. And I think that's the perfect advice. You know, it clearly worked out for them too. So this is a simple mechanical problem involving but fractional effort of that involved in distributing the daily mails to the nation. Telephone talks in the U.S. each day are three times the number of votes which were cast for president in the record election year. Electrified voting as bride to our most prodigal wildcat broadcasting and beloved son, journalism, promises a household efficiency superior to any government of record because it incorporates not only the speed of decision, which is the greatest strength of the dictator, a boon if he's godly, a death ray if he is not, but additional advantages which can never be his. This is the notion of the benevolent dictator. This is something that when Mencius Moldbug wants an absolute sovereign or monarchy, he wagers on this idea that the dictator will somehow be benevolent and somehow beholden to the desires and needs of the people, which at this juncture of industrial production can't exist. The guy lives in an absolute fucking fantasy world. All of these kind of right-wingers, they essentially do. They don't, which is why they'll never have a successful revolution, and they haven't since the Jacobins and the French Revolution. Additional advantages of electrified voting first coming to mind. One, provides an instantaneous contour map of the workable frontier of the people's wisdom. For purposes of legislation, administration, future exploration, and debate so that neither nor underestimate may occur of their will and ability. Two, certify spontaneous popular cooperation in the carrying out of each decision. Three, allows for continuous correction of the course or even complete reaction should and as experience indicate desirability without political scapegoating. 4. No foreign power in the world can stand up against the unified might thus invoked through the thrilling mystical awareness of multi-millions of individuals, that they have personally taken responsibility for the course, and that their own inward secret moral decision coincides with the majority in the application of their mutual strength, vast now in USA, by the will of God beyond any in history, and in the righteous salvation of the peoples of the earth. 5. The credit and imagination for all outside peoples of the world will be so stimulated that nothing will stop them short of attaining a line to that voice. But so to do, they must join up with democracy. 6. The possibility mathematically of effective abuse through cheating is nil. I venture to say that the self-policing by the honor system spontaneously invoked would make the fate of horse thieves or snatchers of absent news vendors' pennies frivolous by comparison. No bloc or pressure group that is not a constitutional enemy could consider running the risk of stuffing the direct votes of any subversive enemy to democracy within the U.S. would be inconsequential in number, would eventually disappear in such a system. 7. It cuts right across all red tape of legal precedent and any question of constitutionality, and may be started extramural to the Constitution while getting out the bugs. For instance, by Charlie McCarthy, the Clifton Fadiman script by Time Questions, sponsored by Coca-Cola. Ooh, that's really interesting. Someday to be constitutionally adopted when tuned up. 8. The economic credit base is self-contained. 9. As direct evolution, it cancels the possibility of revolution. Accomplishment of this voice must be a deed of organized responsibility of the U.S. press in its broadest sense. If having tried it, a modernized, electrified, direct democracy proves inferior as a survival means against all comers, then may the people turn with contentment to the superior means. But if direct democracy is not tried now, future generations will champion it, and there will be world civil wars until it receives adequate trial. I believe America has now won the right to be first to try democracy, that it is both sufficiently experienced and intellectually developed to provide a safety factor margin which can ensure success after all deductions, for bitter hardship of mental and physical stress, for surprise and panic, and most importantly for gross error. But whatever America's choice, I go with it with heart and soul. For its sagacity and time sense, I believe infallible. Yes, I can see how that would be a superior means of government, but there is still something bigger, essential and bigger, which we first must consider, without which one or infinity of life cell organisms is but frightful matter, and that is the rebirth of our faith. In a direction, incomprehensible meaning, no matter how meager that checks with our daily thought, with our most random soliloquy, that implicitly tingles in our fingers and toes, that gladdens our visions, and even is singing in me as I catch at a new popular song. Faith, far, far more precise in meaning than the academician's quote-unquote non-anthropomorphic designation of God, and with none of the popular vagueness of Einstein's epochal quote-unquote cosmic religious sense. Yet embodying all that is important of those concepts, not down or up written, but translated to a living, workable spontaneity that requires no answer from others or books. In all sense exciting, all reason inspiriting, faith is an omnipotent justice, omniscient love, always attending with infinite wisdom. There is, of course, the church. Today, a big three monopoly of credos, a coalesced Roman, Protestant, and Jewish big business. It's back to the wall. You know, you see, he's calling out the church as well. But he's doing it from a Christian restorationist perspective. Irrespective of its past values to faith, the church is now but a convenient compromise to divert the pressure of fear's escape through the perpetuated water wheel of the remanufacture of all useless contrivances, of which the individual would personally divest himself but for nostalgic ramifications. The church, once the largest and busiest of community structures, now exists only as a memorial to the necessity of a special building for God, so that a compromised, quote-unquote, he need not interrupt business in the latter's overtowering house on the 6 days of the week that are not, quote-unquote, his yet to be on hand. To broadcast the right stuff on the 7th while the boys go off golfing. The church is also security capital's non-taxable hostage against mobile democracy's eventful discard of real property, the perpetual debt base that persistent static in the otherwise high-fidelity reception of industrial democracy economics. In the totalitarian states, conversely, all messianic credit is caro nome, allocated to the supreme living individual symbolically centralized in one, our Father who art in Berlin, Moscow, Madrid, and Rome, simultaneously, the end of all anthropomorphic religion. And the supreme individual is never a pretty god, and he is funny when he goes by special train to meet himself coming the other way through a mountain pass and shakes hands with his absurd reflection. But all of importance here to me tonight are two reactions. One negative, the other positive. First, that both sides have allegiance to fallacy, and the individuals of each side are forced to esoterica, and to personal exemptions from all law, scientific or moral, through the laws are clearly mirrored to each individual as essential for all others but self. Well, maybe not for the... I don't know what that means. And positively, that tonight, vividly and tacitly always, God is articulating through his universally reliable laws, laws pigeonholed by all of us under topics starkly scientific, behavior laws graphically maintained in the performance of impersonal instruments and mechanics, pulsing in supersensorial frequencies, which may serve yellow, black, red, white, or pink with equal fidelity. And I see conscious man alone as mechanically fallible and progressively less reliable in personal articulation of God's ever swifter word, which was indeed in the beginning only as matter over matterist. As philosopher, scientist, and informed technician, impersonally and universally preoccupied, is man infallible. For the oral and written word was but the haphazard infant of the ever more precise modern instrumental articulation of communicable comprehension. We know this to be true because mechanisms can only perform successfully their ever more superhuman and untiring precision of communication of truth in proportional degree to their engineered adherence to and interpretation of universal laws, which, though sometimes couched in poetry, are always essentially scientific. As Minor Testament witness the 200-inch telescope, as it proceeds to reveal a known universe at least 8 times as great as yesterday's, and the electronic microscope, which now begins the revelation of fundamental minutiae, 50,000 times finer than the best light or eyesight microscope, and the actual achievement of atomic energy released and controllable. Controllable is the operative word here. These wondrous actualities were always there, inherent in the universe of a God of meaning, but only now through impersonal word of these scientific instruments does God speak of them to our widening comprehension. I knew in a sense that they were there. So did you. But neither of us knew that the other knew until we could say to each other, there are only precisely identified. Only finite in adherence to stark laws of science made this possible. So within the universe, all of these miracles, these quote-unquote, they were always here. They were here with us all along by God's will. And, you know, I'm a believer in God. I'm not an atheist whatsoever. To preface that, sorry, I have a bit of a vocal fry. It's a long one, man. But so doing this all in one shot. We got one shot here. So, you know, this is personally my belief. And hopefully, you know, that jives with some of you guys. I'm not sure. But, you know, I'm not trying to do this whole, like, veneration of images, hop on the, you know, aesthetic Catholicism train or anything. I'm just somebody who believes very much in the ways, the similar beliefs to Buckminster Fuller. And God says, observe the paradox of man's creative potentials and his destructive tactics. He could have his new world through sufficient love, and all's fair, in love as well as in war, which means you can junk as much rubbish, skip as many stupid agreements by love, spontaneous, unselfish, radiant. Think it over. I was amazed, and despite all inertia impelled to write, and many may have written it earlier, and better without my knowledge. In fact, I'm sure they have. But I'm writing this, and that is important, that is God at first hand. Never before has neutral looked on with such unprecedented willingness to evaluate, adjust, and comprehend. Never before has neutral so powerful looked on. Never before has neutral, by virtue of a myriad of instruments, been so keenly aware of every little hamlet upon the face of the globe, so intimately near to them, yet at the same time so ducks-backed to broadcast falsehood or half-truth. This is the issue with technologists, technocrats, and whatnot. The media class, even the independent media class, which I'm ostensibly a part of as well, that, you know, I wonder sometimes why I signed up for this, which is why I'm trying to come up with better tools to communicate these things. I still think, you know, the podcast format, the problem with podcasting is all the personality stuff and the kind of fandubs and parasocial elements that it reinforces and induces and really subjects the public to, that I have most of a problem. I think orality still has a lot of value as a form of information communication and distribution. But we have to find more cryptic ways to administer this. Well, you know, also being able to support myself, you know, it's been a challenging couple of months, honestly, but still, you know, we trudge on, because at the end of the day, if I didn't have faith in something, I wouldn't do it. You know, a lot of the stuff I've kind of backed away from is because, you know, my intuition, the words of my surroundings, some sort of higher force kind of tells me, like, hey man, this stuff's bad news. You gotta stay away from this. Think it over. I was amazed, and despite all inertia, impelled to write, and many have written it earlier and better without my knowledge. In fact, I'm sure they have, but I'm writing this, and that is important. That is God at first hand. I had to repeat that because the reason I didn't want to do something of my own opinion is because I have knowledge that a lot of my thoughts are not mine. You know, they came before me, and they've been in alignment with something like this text for a while. So I think it's important that we don't just try to take ownership over our own ideas, because at the end of the day, like, this podcast really isn't about me. It doesn't have that much to do with me, but I still think there's value in communicating these messages. I just see myself as kind of like, I don't know, a kind of evangelist for the words that are being written right here and many of the words that have been written before this. And we have to, the reason why we have to do this, the reason why I'm still doing this, because, like, there's a lot of half-truths out there. There's a lot of people lying. And that pisses me off, honestly. It makes me really mad. You know, it's a beautiful day. There are birds out there singing. You know, and I can look onto that and admire that. But, you know, it's also like I can't purge from my mind just the sheer amount of lies that are being told and have always been told. But, you know, one of my favorite Deleuze quotes is when he says the whole purpose of philosophy isn't just the generation of new concepts, it's the impedance of stupidity. You know, it's taking down a notch the stupidity that threatens to wreck and cause discord all over the world. And so, yeah, this is the purpose. These are innocuous in their magnificent mechanical extension. People of the United States, I believe the vast majority of them, who are at present especially staked out to be fooled in a big way, which is vitally and mortally by all the warring or plotting factions, foreign and domestic, are precisely those who remain unmoved. It is these silent propagandies who unerringly appraise the pro or anti-social values of each world event, of each communique, of even of personal happening, at other times trivial, as these too many shade the outcome values of man's transition from dominant self-deceit to preponderant self-mastery. from stomach rule to dictative reason, from politicians tricking to scientific guidance, from a fear to a happy, comprehensive motivation. You see, he talks about, you know, sort of involving yourself in every world event. It makes you a great vessel for propaganda, which is why you have to exit these internet discourses. I locked my account. I'm not doing that anymore. I've had enough. You know, this is what I find important. And it's presented in a powerfully enough way. You know, I think stuff can still cut through and resonate. I don't think you have to play into these algorithmic games. I really don't. Honestly. Sure, you may not be massively famous, but as Moma said in 1991, the great musician, thinker, writer, visual artist, I mean, the guy's just a total, I think, polymath. He said, in the future, everyone will be famous for 15 people. And I think that's very true. And because he is innately aware of these things, does man evade past snares, steel himself against artful pathos, welcome the speedy destruction of those former barriers to world happiness, which have been humanly insuperable without fracture by any individual member of the old order. From a nihilist to deacon, from clerk to prime minister, no matter how distinguished by courage and integrity, but now common man has implicit faith in common man, can safely negotiate a roadway with any unknown other man, even passing each other at 140 miles an hour in opposite directions, has only been prevented from intercommunicating that faith directly, but now is willing to wager all on mutual effective comprehension at the crucial moment, will not be shamed out of his faith by attempts to falsely identify him, has weighed his distress over concentrate frightfulness in an exquisite moment against unending, elusive, and unmitigated greater suffering. The revolution has come, set on fire from the top. Let it burn swiftly. Neither the branches, trunk, nor root will be endangered. Only last year's leaves and the parasite-beaded moss and orchids will not be there. The next spring brings fresh growth and freestanding flowers. Man now vastly instrumented and attendant upon universal laws and his blind flying through life will give ever less heed to the seat of the pants opinions of personal equations, aces, for he knows it was those detonations which formally misguided him into his betrayal by selfish scheming. This is why, you know, you gotta, these kind of like opinion grifters, they take goblins as they may be called. They're really a satanic force because they're only scheming through authoring this language for themselves. And it's a sad stuff, man. Here is true world democracy in the swift making, a democracy which socializes all plenty, as that plenty is wrested from scarcity by world-widening cooperative industry, a democracy which scientifically seeks categorical validity for all the motivations, taxes only inertia, and awards copiously its individuals who radiantly expand the commonwealth, awarded them out of the newly integrated wealth captured from the unseen fresh fruits of the limitless environment, and not by the slightest impoverishment of commonwealth, either by mortgage or individual indebtedness. Here is God's purpose, For God to me, it seems, is a verb, not a noun. He always talks about, I want to be a verb, not a noun. I love that. That's like true it's. This is kind of what we were getting at in the specter of finance punk. Becoming a verb, becoming a non-subject. Proper or improper is the articulation of the art, objective or subjective, is loving. Not the abstraction love commanded or entreated is knowledge dynamic. Not legislative code, not proclamation law, not academic dogma, nor ecclesiastic canon. Yet God is a verb, the most active connoting, the vast harmonic reordering of the universe from unleashing chaos of energy. And there is born and heralded a great natural peace, not out of exclusive pseudo-static security, but out of including, refining, dynamic balancing. Not as lost. Only the false and non-existent are dispelled. And I've thought through to tomorrow, which is also today. The telephone rings and you say to me, hello, Buckling, this is Christopher, or Daddy, it's Allegra, or Mr. Fuller, this is the telephone company business office. And I say, you are inaccurate, because I knew you were going to call the furthermore, I recognize that it is God who is quote-unquote speaking. And you say, aren't you being fantastic? And knowing you, I say no. At least a quarter of a billion people sit quietly each day for hours in darkened halls, and they say they are at the movies, not looking at anyone or anything real. They certainly don't see the screen. I say they are looking at God. You see, this is what I'm talking about. This is sort of what I was communicating in the Desert Island series and the Volcano series. And this is part of the decelerationist and degross movement issue, and an issue that I have with it as a believer of God, and this idea that we can divide nature between natural, because I try to see God's working in everything. I try to see it in technology. I see it in literally, and this is exactly what Buckminster Fuller is getting at here. And I think it's really important, at least for me, this has brought me a lot of peace and levity, is to start seeing things this way, you know? And I think part of that peace comes from the fact that it's the truth, you know? So no amount of, you know, it's kind of interesting to speak on the kind of selfishness of our times and the backwardness of our system. We celebrities and these coastal striver types in Los Angeles, they're essentially brain-dead lumpen proletariats who just, they failed up. They believe in the magic healing powers of crystals and other New Age garbage. And this is essentially, when people say, why does Marxism still exist? I mean, this is a pretty good indicator why. I mean, currently, the system is not democratically structured. It's not a meritocracy. The best man and the best woman does not get the job. I mean, that's to me, it's less of a grievance issue I have with the current economic system over inequalities rather than it promotes things that are not great. I mean, they're not good enough. People, like, it's not the things that are supported by these institutions are not things of great character. And, you know, this is ultimately why scholarship is failing, not because of something called wokeness, although there is a bit of that. I think cancel culture is a problem. I think it's been a problem, but there are much bigger problems to focus on, and to make one's whole identity about this, I think, is incredibly misguided. I think it's totally wrong. Incalculable millions of people sit isolated and silent. This is about the movie theater. And they say they are listening to Josephine Baker swinging or Raymond Graham swing. Of course not really, but really. And I say they are listening to God. And the journalists tell me that Hitler is blitzkrieging over the earth. And I say that is the greatest understatement in history, for it is God now doing the house cleaning and making the necessary renovations in a hell of a hurry, because we perpetually failed to make them in everyday ways in our own time. And there is now only half a world left, and one half of our time remaining in which to let our hair all the way down and say, we have plenty, we have the means, the ability, the knowledge. Let us start the mechanism to creative account, not to vast and vaster destruction. Hitler is our fault. We have to take responsibility for the genocides of our time. You know, when we have predictive programming doing drone bombing, this is our responsibility. We have a responsibility to take care of this because we the reason why these atrocities still happen, why they're still exhibited on a mass scale today, is because we're failing God. I really believe that. I don't care if that's, you know, bullshit. I'm a person of faith, you know. I'm a Christian, you know, as well, and this is what I believe in very, very strongly. So, not to, you know, sorry, it's emotional. Let us not subscribe to remedy by amputation, first of all, of our heads. Let us say to the east, the west, the north, and the south, to its now reality spokesman, here is our helping hand, forget your fighting. Let's put things to rights. We'll take care of inconsequential accounting when mankind has been salvaged, if you insist on accounting, for we won't. That is the active, realistic loving of this one moment in all time. No one in history will say that its leader is overstepping its authorized bounds if he takes sincere, forthright, and adequately big steps to accomplish world healing. Let me repeat that. No one in America will say its leader is overstepping his authorized bounds if he takes sincere, forthright, and adequately big steps to accomplish world healing. God will be handling the radio telegraph for such a mandated dictatorship, and democracy is not challenged by such a dictator whose very first move must and will be tidal waved with demos authority. Stop calling names that are meaningless. You can't suppress God by killing off people who are physically over transceiver mechanisms through which God is broadcasting. But his requirement is dynamic. And if man mechanism proves too inefficient as an invention, he will immediately devise a cataclysmic improvement. Trust the plan. You know, that's the end. There's a postscript here too, which I can also get into, from 1961. And I think, you know, this just really hits hard. I think it's incredibly necessary that everyone go out and they read this book. I'm going to attach a PDF of it, of his poetic work, No More Secondhand God. It's a lot of fun to read this stuff. It's very insightful. It's really helpful on a personal level. And so hopefully this tapestry of commentary and writing and reading hasn't gotten a bit too weird. But this is something I've wanted to talk about for a while now. I'm a big fan of this text, and I hope you guys have a blessed day. You know, keep your heads up.
I'd like to thank you very, very much for the activities I know that you've been engaged in for over 50 years in a particularly interesting manner, gauging the evolution of consciousness and our ability to participate.
But I'd just like to emphasize that I think that I'm only a manifest of what evolution is up to. There has to be an X and has to be a Y character that does such and such.
Yeah.
And that I, by good fortune, happen to be in a sort of a frontier position.
Yes.
Really in the frontier position, because I, in a sense, was almost had been thrown out of the regular patterns. Seemed to be unwanted, so that really it was an exile.
Yeah.
And simply with the enormous perspective that an exile has of looking things over as a whole, I was able to realize that humanity had arrived at some point of transformation, a great threshold crossing.
Yeah.
That is, in view of the fact that all humans were born naked, absolutely helpless, ignorant, we obviously had to find our way, and we had to find our way by trial and error, gradually to discover that we have mind, that mind can discover principles, and that principles themselves are something that cannot be apprehended just by brains of any other creature, that because brains are always and only coordinating the information input from the touching, the smelling, the hearing, the seeing, and making up packages of those inputs. But mind discovers relationships existing between special case packages that are not in the data of any of the special case by themselves. Make it very simple.
Yes.
Isaac Newton's discovering of gravitational behavior. There was nothing in the geometry, the chemistry, like magnetics of Earth that said it was going to attract another body, non-contiguous and thousands of miles away. Nor was there anything in the moon that said it was going to. That there was then such an attraction occurring, and that this interrelationship varied exponentially as a second power of the relative proximity. If you halve the distance between the two, the interattraction is fourfolded or doubled away, reduced one quarter of what it was. There was nothing in either body by itself that said there was going to be such an attraction, certainly not saying it was going to vary and vary exponentially. All the great discoveries of science have been in these interrelationships that are not in any of the data of any of the special case. And that's all the brain can ever deal with, is always the special case information. So that these principles discovered by mind turn out then to be principles. And a principle has no inherent beginning and end, and they do not get accredited by science as a scientific principle if there's ever an exception found. So they are, by definition, inherently eternal. Now, everything the brain deals in is terminal, finite. So that we have mind and mind alone, which human beings have, that no other phenomenon we know in the universe has, which has some access to some eternal principles operating in the universe. And we find these eternal principles themselves are, none of them have ever been found to contradict another. Not only do they not contradict one another, but they're all inter-accommodative. That is, they're all being eternal, or concurrently operative. They do not interfere with them. Some of them then augment one another at exponential rates. When you get a complex of clearly differentiated behaviors that all inter-accommodate one another, this would be called a design. That's what we mean by a design, in contrast to their being disorderly and interfering with one another. So the human mind has apparently gradually been pulling a curtain aside and discovering some of the great design of the universe itself. That we on board of our planet, tiny as we are, our planet can be smaller, tiny little, to you and I big, but to in the astronomical figures, 1/100th of the diameter of the sun, and the sun is a rather small star. It's one of a 100 billion stars in our galaxy. We now know of a billion such galaxies. When we get into distances and magnitudes here, where our little planet could not be more negligible, and you and I are invisible on our planet. Yeah. Therefore, the little human beings on board of that planet, invisible, negligible in size of the universe, have the capability to discover a principle by virtue of which those, we've discovered the principle of optics and refraction of light, therefore we could make a telescope. Mm-hmm. And making able to make that telescope, we've been able to discover all those galaxies, which 99.9% of all those stars are not directly visible to your eye and my eye, so that our minds have the capability to be able to really check up satisfactorily that in a 22 billion light-year diameter sweep out of observation, we know that there are those galaxies, and by our mind discovering principles by virtue of which we find each of the chemical elements has unique way of making waves. Each one has unique wave patterns. Mm-hmm. And with the spectroscope, we're able then to take all that light from all those stars that are non-visible to us, and on board of our planet, those human beings have actually taken an inventory of the relative abundance of all the chemical elements in our universe. Now that you and I on board of our planet would have this kind of capability. I said I came at a moment when I began to be absolutely astonished by being exiled by society in a sense. I saw that little human beings were terribly preoccupied with the games of finding out what is so and having enormous ignorance of yesterday, feeling that you're made hungry. You don't make yourself hungry. It's not quite a piece of design that we are. And people have not found seemingly enough to eat and not enough. So they've been thinking the world was a game of a negative where a man's supposed to be a failure and had to prove himself an exception to live. And I could see that the principles really operating in our universe indicated very, very properly that he was here for a very important function and that he had to discover his mind. And realizing that about the time that I'm in this kind of awareness that we had to invent a lot of words to describe our view and our communicate as you and I are sitting here doing. Mm-hmm. The Oxford Dictionary, latest edition, has about 100,000 words indicating that little human beings in the trial and error have discovered over 100,000 nuances of information that were so different that they really needed their own word. Mm-hmm. And that they've been able to agree on 100,000 words, knowing how difficult it is for human beings to come to an agreement that would read 100,000 words.